got hungry in 1978 and started looking for the Lord. You said, but you're saved. Yeah, I know it, but I was looking for the Lord. And through a series of events, which is a whole message in itself, I guess, but I eventually met Brother Jack Wood in December 1978, joined up with him in 1979, and sat there under him for 2 years, and he preached and taught us, and I was just 32 years old, and he began to have men of God in from around the country to feed and fire us boys up and prepare us for the work of God. And he often, Brother Jack was a man so full of illustration. Everything that he ever saw and everything that he ever did from the time he was in a crib become an illustration. It's incredible. And so in 1979, we sat there and listened to him preach 5-6 times a week. During those 2 years, he mentioned when he got saved and when he went in search of God and the men that helped him. And during those 2 years, he mentioned a lot of names. And one of the names that he mentioned often in his messages was Brother Earl Hughes. And so he created a desire in all of us hearts to meet all of these men of God and men of wisdom that he had that he preached to us about. And then in 1981, Brother Earl came and preached at our camp meeting. First time I'd ever met him. I was 34 years old. He was 54 years old. He was the same age I am now when I met him. And I sat on the front row, I'd only been with Brother Jack 2 years. My heart burned to preach. I wanted the power of God. I wanted all the things that them old men were preaching about and telling us that we could have in God. And I sat there on that front row, and he preached on the book of Jonah. And I sat there, and I laughed, and I cried. And I listened to him preach, and I'd say, Lord, I want that. I want to preach like that. I want to be like that. And here it is, 21 years later, and I'm on the same platform, same meeting, preaching with him and on the front page of the bulletin with him. And I know that don't mean a lot to y'all. But for me, a dream as a young preacher boy to sit and watch a man preach 21 years ago and then to be able to be in a meeting with him. Now, I'm going to tell you something. We do live in a strange age. Secular age, Christian age. It's strange. And if you don't think that them old men of God don't mean something, then get in a fellowship where there's nothing but young men and listen to them. And you can tell there's no old man of God there to steady things and keep it on the right course. That's got the liberty and the power and the finesse to know how to get up in a pulpit and rebuke with grace. To straighten out young men. And don't tell me that they don't need straightening out. I know I was young and I set up for an old man of God. If he knew how to keep us straight, he'd build us up one day and then pop all the air out of us the next day. Now live like that. And I used to wonder why he hated me so much. Then I wonder why he loved me so much. But we needed those things. We need them old men today. They are passing off the scene. Them old men, they come up in the age of inconvenience, was able to get the wit and the wisdom of those old days. Us young men today, us preachers today, they'll be men that can preach just as good as them old men were. But what we're going to miss is most of the young preachers today are not coming up in an age of inconvenience. They're coming up in an age of convenience. And they're never going to have the wisdom, and they're never going to have what them old men had. They're never going to have it. Oh, they can preach as good. They can learn the Bible as good. But we're going to miss something in these days that the old men got when times was hard. Turn with me to 1 Timothy. There are a lot of things I could title this message I want to preach to you. You ever trying to find a method and a way to quit sinning? I'm going to tell you today how to quit sinning. Say, think I can live perfect? Pretty close. I know you can do a lot better than you're doing. You could call this message How to Quit Sinning. Or if we wanted to title it, we could say it's one of the most dreadful sins that's in the church. One of the most horrible sins that's in the ministry. One of the most cruelest sins that's in the pulpit. One of the most abominable sins that lies in the heart of a preacher. Them all pretty good sermon titles. Paul is writing a letter to a young man. He's not only writing a letter to a young man, but he's writing a letter to a young preacher. And he's in the fourth page of his letter, in the fourth chapter of 1 Timothy. And he's got this young preacher on his mind, and he's sure got him on his heart. And he's trying to give him some things that'll keep him in the work and keep him right with God and keep him stirred up. So he's writing along there, and in verse 13 he says, Timothy, till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Neglect, Timothy, not the gift that is in thee, which was given thee by the prophecy with the laying on the hands of the presbytery. Meditate upon these things. Give thyself wholly to them, that thy profit may appear to all. I'm going to teach you how to do something that everybody can see it. Take heed unto thyself and unto the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee. Save them from boredom. I'm going to teach you how to save people from getting bored in church. That's what he was saying. He said, Timothy, until I come, don't give attendance to too much fellowship. Timothy, until I come, don't enjoy too much entertainment. Timothy, until I come, don't participate in too much worldly affairs. Timothy, until I come, for God's sake, boy, don't be spending too much time in bed. Timothy, until I come, don't give attendance to too much pleasure. Timothy's saying by that, well, my God, what can I do? Give attendance to reading. Until I come, Timothy, make sure you read, son. Don't be a playing too much golf. Don't be going hunting too much. Don't be going to too many ball games. Unplug your Nintendo and your Game Boy. Don't be fishing too much, but give attendance to read. Attendance means to be present. Attendance means to accompany. Attendance means to take care of. Attendance means to pay attention. To what? Books. Books. For God's sake, books. What a horrible word to most Baptists. Men ought to always be reading the book. Always. You might not, I understand, today's scheduling, and you might not be able to read every day, but you ought to always have a book. It's got a bookmarker in there where you stop and where you're going to start. And it ought to be sitting beside your bed or your easy chair. Somewhere near you, there ought to be a book that you're reading. Usually, I've only preached this message a few times, but by the time I get halfway through it, you think I'm preaching on adultery. There's so much conviction in the church. Reading allows you to enjoy and speak with the dead. You can enjoy fellowship with dead people with a book. I pull out. I've got Dallimore's 2-volume works on George Whitefield. I've read them so many times, and I still want to go back and read them again. But in the 4th chapter, Whitefield is trying to, he's trying to tell people how much he enjoyed books. He said, get Joseph Allen's book on Alarm to the Unconverted. He said, get Baxter's book on A Call to the Unconverted. And back in those days, it took 15 weeks to save up enough money, 15 weeks of wages just to buy a set of Matthew Henry's commentaries. And Whitfield loved Henry, and he said, I hope I never forsake that candle of God. But at 5 o'clock in the morning, he would stretch Matthew Henry on that floor, and he'd lay his Bible on that floor. And for hours, he would sit and read and pour it in and pour it in and read and pour it in. And then go stand in the open air and preach for hours. First sermon he ever preached, he preached out of Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Two are better than one. And he said that message was birthed into his heart from reading Matthew Henry. Preaching will allow you to speak and enjoy the dead. Preaching will allow you to have conversations with the living. I mean reading. Reading will enrich your memory. It'll help your memory. You know where Alzheimer's, you know what's the cause of Alzheimer's from watching too much television? Because what happens if you don't exercise vital organs, they get weak and they develop disease and troubles. And so these days we sit for years before the television, and the poor mind being a muscle, it don't get no exercise, so it starts showing the signs of weakness, so Alzheimer's sets in on it. Said, who said all that? I did. Reading will polish your wit. That way your conversation won't be boring. And I won't go to sleep listening to you. Reading will improve your judgment. You wonder where character is gone. Character comes from adversity. Character comes from raising. Character comes from reading books about them old men that come up, them old military men, them old preachers, them old statesmen, them old warriors, them old wilderness men, them old men that accomplish things in life. That's where character comes from. You pick up them books and you read about old Patrick Henry and John Adams and Stonewall Jackson and John MacArthur, and before long you're wanting to pick up something from them and something they did and something they said and something they accomplished, and that's going to put some character in you. I read Dutch's book. The book's called Dutch. Edmund Morris wrote it on the life of Ronald Reagan. Well, I recommend it. It's a good book. He's 17 years old. He was reading a book called The Prince of Nuples, and he said, and the gospel was in the book, and he said he got saved reading that book. And he said in that book it was about a man that went to Washington and gotten saved and got into politics. And he said he got saved, and also there was a desire to go to Washington and be a politician when he was just a teenage boy. He grew up, and his life kind of speared off in another direction, and he met Jane Wyman, and he married her, and she divorced him because she hated to sit and listen to him talk about politics so much. So he married Nancy Davis and stayed with him the rest of his life. She loved for him to talk politics. Reading enables a man to escape the boredoms of life. Yeah, I hate to hear someone say I'm bored. Every time I hear a child say it, I want to just slap them. Swat them, bored. Reading, what reading is, it takes nourishment into the eyes just like the mouth takes in food. And the mind digests just as the stomach digests food. And the mind grows just like the body grows with food. And if you don't eat, you're going to dry up and die. And if you don't read, your mind's going to dry up and die. You're going to be intellectually dead. You don't read some books. It's going to shrink. If you don't eat, the body shrinks. It loses weight. And if you don't read, the mind's going to shrink. Be about the size of a grapefruit. Oh, no, a grape. Raisin. That's what it looked like, a little old raisin. Books are to be tasted. Books are to be chewed. Books are to be swallowed. Books are to be digested so that you can grow and be strong and profitable. The mind must be introduced to good books just like the life is introduced to good friends. I've met friends along my life that have added to my life and blessed my life. I got a couple of friends that call me once a week just want to know if I've got off into sin yet. And I'm scared to get off into sin because I'm scared when they call me, I'm going to have to tell them I am. That's good friends. You read about evangelists all the time. They're falling out and they're committing this and they're doing that. And these guys are worried that I'm on. And they call me every week. Those are good friends. Just like good friends have helped me, there's been books in my life that have inspired me and helped me. And God has used those books in my life. They have become good friends to me. Reading allows you to do things you'll never be able to accomplish in life. Reading allows you to climb to the top of Mount Everest. Reading allows you to dive to the bottom of the sea. Reading allows you to fly beyond the stars and the moon and the sun. Reading allows you to stand beside George Whitefield all over England and America and just stand there with him and listen to him preach. Reading allows you to stand on the front line of the Civil War and listen to the mini balls whistle by your head and hit the bark of the trees and splatter. Reading allows you to sail the seas with Columbus. Reading allows you to ride with Julius Caesar as he conquered the world. Reading allows you to march with Hannibal as he conquered the Roman Empire. Reading allows you to travel with the Apostle Paul. Reading allows you to chase criminals with John Douglas. Yeah! Reading allows you to watch the execution and torture of Savonarola. Reading allows you to stand in that room when Stonewall Jackson had the last conversation on this earth with his wife. Reading allows you to hear Peter Cartwright stand and preach. You know what said on Peter Cartwright's book? Everybody's always trying to wonder where tongues come from. Someone said tongues come from a bunch of women that was yakking in 1904 in St. Louis. That's what I heard. But Peter Cartwright says in 1826, the Mormons come into his camp meetings, they're speaking in tongues. And he got mad at them, got him a bullwhip and run them off. Reading allows you to go to the end of the world for just a few dollars. Reading a good book the second time is like shaking hands with an old friend. I never get tired of reading George Whitefield, never. I got 17 books on his life, I read them over and over and over. I just never find boredom. I never find a rut in my life. I can pick up Whitefield and start reading him. I can listen to him preach. When he went down, Moorsfield there in London was that east side of London where all the prostitutes and the drug addicts and drunks and the thieves and all the insane sensual entertainment. Boy, no one ever went down into Moorsfield on the east side of London. And after Whitefield had gotten that birth of fire down in his heart to preach, he began to think about going to Moorsfield. Everybody thought he was going to get himself killed going down there. He goes down into Moorsfield. He sets that little pulpit, that little cage pulpit up and stands up and begin to preach. And boy, it talks about how these guys come from everywhere. They had drums and they'd stand beside him and beat the drums and trying to drown him out. They'd stand on top of one another's shoulders with sticks and try to knock him out of his stand. And they said eventually all the little children started going to Moorsfield with him, and they would sit around him while people would throw dead cats and dead possums and eggs and rocks and dirt. And he said, Whitefield said many times he saw them cats and eggs hit them little children. And he said they was God's shield for the man of God as he preached. I never get tired of reading what Whitefield's life. Never do. You'll not get far in the work of God without reading. You're not going to get far at all. People want to hear something. There's nothing more boring in all of life than a boring preacher. They're the born of saints. I'd rather hear my wife chew me out. It's far more exciting. I'd rather her get mad at me and say those things she says. Hey, listen, I got in a bad habit, and I guess this is rude, and I'm sorry, but when I get in a meeting and the preacher's boring, I naturally go to doodling. I'll give me a piece of paper, and I'll just start doodling. I can't help it. I can't stand a boring preacher. And my daughter got to where she would check my Bible when I'd come in from the meetings to see how many pages of doodles, see how many boring preachers was in the meeting. I can't help it. If you look over and catch me a doodling while you're preaching, son, you know what's going on. I can't handle it. And neither can anybody else. Reading. You're not going to walk in life very far without reading. John Boyce was one of the translators of the King James Bible. And I've been reading that book this week, last couple of weeks. John Boyce said that he got to where in life he never went anywhere without a book because he scared he was going to get in the company of a bunch of boring people. And he said, especially preachers. And he said he always wanted to have a book with him, so when he got in a crowd, a company of a bunch of boring people, he just pulled a book out and go to read so he wouldn't waste no time. Hey, I've been around some preachers like that. wish I had me a book with me instead of listening to them. This is Tuesday morning. Tuesday morning camp meeting. I ain't preaching on adultery and drinking and dope, just reading. It's all right. You not go far with your wants and desires without reading. I was in a meeting the other day. I'll tell you how far we've got. I was in a meeting the other day. The guy in front of me got up and preached for an hour and a half on Santa Claus. He had a verse of scripture for his eyebrows and his nose and his hair and his suit, his boots and his belt and his ho, ho, ho. He had a verse of scripture. It took him an hour and a half to beat poor Santa Claus to death. And I looked around at all the kids, and that's really for some kids, that's the only good guy in life they know. And to get up there and beat him to death, bloody him up, stomp on him, rip his hair off. I mean, call him an antichrist. Them poor kids, they ain't got no hope in this world. And I got to get up there and preach behind this guy. He never read no books. And then another guy gets up and preaches for an hour on the Easter Bunny. Hey, people need to know more about Easter bunnies and Santa Claus. You say, I don't have time to read. Make time. If that was true that we didn't have time to read, the malls would be empty. We didn't have time to read, cable TVs would go out of business. If we didn't have time, video stores would go broke. If we didn't have time to read, the golf courses would be overgrown with weeds. If we didn't have time, the deers would multiply. If we didn't have time, there'd be no limit on the fishes. We didn't have time. I seen a cartoon the other day, and it was people in the water, and the fish were fishing with the fishing poles. And each fish had a long stringer of people. And I looked at one fish, and he was sitting there, and he had a bottle of beer. Boy, he had a long stringer of people. Another guy was fishing with tobacco, and he had a long stringer. Another guy was fishing with a ball glove, and he had a long stringer. Another guy was fishing with a TV for bait. And he had a long, and another guy was fishing, he had a radio, another one had a TV, and some of them had money, some of them was using jewelry, some of them was using clothes, one of them had a gun. Now when a poor little fish sitting over under a tree, he ain't caught nothing all day. He said, what was his bait? A book. He had a book, couldn't catch nothing, everybody else was catching everything. The mind is oiled by reading. And if there's no oil, it freezes up and cracks under heat and pressure. That's why you can't take nothing. That's why life's too stressful. All men talk, you get around a bunch of men today, all they want to talk about is TV programs. They want to talk about movies, they want to talk about sports, and they want to talk about their problems. Reading books, my first point, that's just my introduction. The first thing about books and reading books, it calms the stresses and pains of life. You ever wondered how people survived before we had medicines, antidepressants, all the other things that soothe our nerves? You know, all these medicines that we enjoy, they're not much more than 50, 60, no more. Most of them are no more than 75 years old. Ever wondered how people survived before modern-day medicine came in to calm us down? I read the life of David Ben-Gurion, and David Ben-Gurion was a Polish boy by the name of David Green. He come out of Poland, and God really put his hands on him, and he's called the father of modern-day Israel. He was the one that went to Israel and started the Zionist movement that began to bring all them Jews from all over Europe and all over the world. And as they began to pour into Israel, they didn't have no facilities at all. There wasn't much, hardly anything there, and there was no stores, there wasn't much food, and the people looked that were coming in, they spoke all the different languages of Europe from whatever country they was coming for. And Ben-Gurion was the one that had to settle everybody down and train them and teach them, and the women even looked to him that had babies, they even looked to him for diapers. Because he didn't have nothing. The armies looked to him for advice and leadership. They looked to him for weapons of war that they had to fight the Arab nation. The whole world was against David Ben-Gurion. They didn't want the Israel nation to come into existence. We were reluctant. Harry Truman was even reluctant to side with Israel. And ambassadors and dignitaries and politicians came from all over the world. And you talk about worldwide pressure. And you talk about civil and social pressure and people pressure that David Ben-Gurion was under while he tried to rebuild that nation and rebuild the army and rebuild the government and build schools and build settlements and build homes and at the same time sit down with dignitaries from every country in the world. And his daughter said every time that they would come to New York, said his dad would disappear. Said the media hunted for him, the politicians hunted for him. And she would say, if you're looking for dad, he's in a bookstore. And he would bring a new empty suitcase to New York, and he would go in those bookstores, and he would fill those suitcases up with books. And when the pressure overwhelmed him, his wife said he would lock himself in that back bedroom and sit back there and read for hours to relieve himself from the stress that was pressuring him to death. And when those small Israel armies that were outnumbered 80-1 against the Arab nation, when them small armies that didn't have hardly any guns, when they would go fight the Arabs, the pressure of his men fighting that Arab nation was so great on David Ben-Gurion, he'd retreat to that back room and lock that door and get in there with his books just to give his mind some relief. Paul's last letter before he died, he said, study to show thyself approved unto God. A workman that needed not be ashamed. He said, study. You know what workman means? You know what workman means in the Greek? Work, man. Say it real slow. Workman. Work, man. Study. Work, man. The eighth sentence in the Bible before Paul is executed. The eighth sentence before Paul is taken out and put to death. He said, bring me my books. The eighth sentence before he's gone, he said, bring me my books. You say, but he's saved. I know. Bring me my books. You say he's nearing death. He knows that. Bring me my books. You say he's been preaching for 30 years. I know that. He said, bring me my books. Life is painful. He's in chains and bondage. I know. He said, bring me my books. He wrote most of the New Testament. I know that. He said, bring me my books. Educated at the feet of Gamaliel, a very educated mind. I know. And he says, bring me my books. He who won't use another man's brains has no brains of his own. What do you think them fishermen were doing when they weren't fishing? Was mending their nets. What should a preacher be doing when he's not preaching? Mend his nets. What should you be doing when you're not doing your occupation? Read. God's sake, read. Julius Caesar, his ship was sinking. They were coming in from an engagement of war, firing. He took the ship home as his army was marching back into Rome. And as that ship was nearing the shores of Italy, it sank. And Julius Caesar jumped and began to swim to shore. When he jumped out of that ship, he didn't grab his sword, didn't grab his shield. He didn't even grab his wife. Didn't grab the crown,
and didn't grab no friend. You say, what did he grab? The book he was reading. And he swam to shore with that book out of the water so he wouldn't get it wet so he could finish it when he got to shore. And he swam with one hand and held that book out of the water. Books! My God, books! I remember my neighbor beat on my door some years back. He's beating on my door, and we run to the door, scared us to death. And he said, your house is on fire. And he had seen smoke coming out of the soffit out from under the eave there of the house. When he said, my house is on fire, I bet I'm not worried about my wife. I ain't worried about her dishes. I'm not worried about her dresses. I ain't worried about nothing she's got. I went and got my son, and I took him into my library, and I stood him right on the floor. And I said, son, you stand here. You don't move. And if I start screaming, you start throwing my books out that window. I wasn't worried about my house. I wasn't worried about nothing. I wanted to save my books. Thank God it wasn't burning down. Ovid was a great poet in the days of Homer and Plato. And because of the things that he wrote, they said was against the politics, and they banished him from home, and he lost the luxury of his house and society and the wife and the children. And while he was off in exile, he wrote the greatest works that Ovid had written. And he wrote them to keep from losing his mind. He studied them books to keep from losing his mind. Listen, you wait till you go through them fiery trials. When that fire comes into that house and begins to burn hell and burn children and burn everything down, you're going to need something to grab hold of. You're going to need it. The mind can go on a vacation with a book. Every now and then, you need a vacation. Now, I can't go, so I just send my mind. But don't let it stay gone. Bring it back. Because if it stays, because if you let it go on a vacation, you don't bring it back. That's what we call insanity, moron. You let your mind go on a vacation, it can view the scenes of a foreign land. The mind can look at the mountains of Austria with a good book. You can observe the waves of the Atlantic Ocean from a ship. Let your mind go on a vacation with a good book. You can watch the storm clouds gather over Mount Carmel. You can stand in the midst of the peace of Charles Wesley's home reading a good book. I can't ever get away from every time I think of Charles John Wesley and George Whitfield. You have to excuse me. I'm fixing to kind of take a jig-jag here. Them boys, when they started preaching, they thought that marriage was idolatry. And they thought if you got married, that you would worship and love a woman more than you would God. So they decided they just weren't going to get married. Well, God knew better, and he was trying to teach them three guys something. So to John, he sent two good women. And John wouldn't marry them. I'm talking about good women. So he let John marry the third one, Molly. And when it come time to die, you can sum up their marriage in this one sentence. When it come time to die, John Wesley looked down at his dying wife, and he said, Molly, 1,000 years couldn't undo what you've done with your tongue. And George Whitfield, George, he wouldn't get married either. There was this girl named Elizabeth Dalmonic. She loved him to death. And she chased him all over England. And she wanted to start to get a flame going. But old George, he's got the same marriage as idolatry. So he ends up coming to America, and he's preaching up and down the eastern coast. And he spends a weekend with Jonathan Edwards. You know the guy that wrote to Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God? He spends a weekend with him. And he notices that his wife, Catherine, was such a blessing and so graceful and so godly. He said, you know something? He said, maybe the women can be a blessing to the world. So he sits down and writes a letter back to Elizabeth to ask for her hand. But when Elizabeth got the letter, she done got tired of waiting on marrying somebody else. So when Whitfield comes back to America, he's up there in Scotland preaching. And Hal Harris, who was the guy that had taught him how to preach in the open air, he brought him down to Abergavenny, Wales, and George Whitfield married a divorced woman by the name of Elizabeth James. And that marriage, I don't know, there's not a whole lot written on it, but he did leave her in America for 2 years and went back to England and preached. And then when she come over, he left her in England, he went back to America and preached for a couple of years. And John Wesley said she was a good woman, but Whitfield's standards were too high. And Charles Wesley, Hal Harris, who had taught Whitfield how to preach, Hal Harris was an open-air preacher down in the country of Wales. And organized religion hated him for preaching the open air because they thought it was sacrilegious. And old Hal Harris, he went from town to town and he would preach, and that power of God would fall. And he was going to this city, and the justice of the peace swore out a warrant for him, was going to arrest him when he got there for gathering up a crowd, you know, without a license. So when he got there, this justice of the peace is trying to make his way through a crowd of 4,000 or 5,000 people that had gathered around to hear old Harris preach. That power of God fell, and that old justice of the peace got saved. He got caught in that power. And so when he went to Charles Wesley, he told him, "I was going to arrest you, but now I'm going to invite you to home for dinner." So he brought Charles Wesley home. Well, when he walked in the door, his wife wouldn't stand to have an open-air preacher in her house. She ran out the back door. I've met some women like that. I've met some preacher's wives like that. And so Hal Harris and this justice of the peace, they sat down, they begin to talk. He had a daughter named Sarah. And old Sarah sat right there and listened to her daddy and all that old street preacher talk about the things of God. She got under conviction, got saved shortly thereafter. She grew up and became the wife of Charles Wesley. She was so sweet and so peaceful that Charles Wesley looked at John one day after he'd been preaching with him 2 or 3 years. He said, "John, you keep preaching. I'm going home, man." He went back home and stayed home for the rest of his life and wrote 4,000 songs in the peace of his house. Where we get all them songs. Every time you read something Charles Wesley, think about him in a peaceful marriage. You see, God in the very beginning had an idea that he was going to save humanity with a book. Christ came, I know, but he didn't stay forever. But the book's forever settled in heaven and earth. God intended to save humanity with a book. How are you going to get it to them if they don't read or you don't read? A dark mind is a devil's workshop. And imaginations are manufactured and cooked up in a dark mind that don't read. King James, whom our Bible is named after, he was a lover of books. He got his degree from Oxford University. And he used to love to go back to the Oxford Library even after he was king. The times when they were translating the Bible, he would go back to the library at Oxford. He talked with those translators, but he loved to go to the library. And he was standing in the middle of that library, and here's what he said. He said, "I would wish, if it were ever to be my lot in life, to be carried captive and to be shut up in this prison." He said, "To be bound with these chains and spend my life with these fellow captives, which are here where I stand." He said, "I love this place. Men of books. Men of books." The second reason why you ought to read is that you have something to say. I go back again. You ever talk to a boring person who's got nothing to say? You're never bored with a book. Never. Readers attract crowds of readers. Reading repels and disgusts lazy people. Lazy people don't like readers. Readers like readers, and lazy people like lazy people. Lazy people can't stand the guilt of hanging around a reader. They can't stand, they'll find something wrong with him to justify their laziness why they won't read. I studied the life of the Apostle Paul, and it's in those, in some of the old books that I found. Gamaliel, when he had them students in his school, and Paul was one of them, he had some things. He made them read the biographies of great men in Paul's day. They had to read the books that were coming out on the philosophies of that day. And also Gamaliel required that all them students had to memorize the first 5 books of the Bible, perfect, word for word, line for line, sentence for sentence, precept upon precept, line upon line. And those students of Athens was already coming out and traversing the world, and they was already coming down into Jerusalem to look and read and discuss that Hebrew theology and to debate it with that Athenian philosophy. And Gamaliel taught them boys that they had, he said, at the snap of a finger, they had to take every sentence in those 5 books and use portions of those verses to combat and argue and debate the philosophies of the day. That's why you couldn't out-argue the Apostle Paul. That's why you couldn't win an argument. That's why you couldn't even get into a discussion with him. He knew the philosophies of the day. He knew that Bible. He had memorized it. He had a verse of scripture for everything that was going on in the world. We only have two incidences in his preaching. But in Titus 1, he quotes from one of them philosophies, one of them philosophers. He said, one of them, even a prophet of your own, said the Christians are always liars, evil beasts, and slow babies. So Paul reaches out and gets some of that stupid philosophy and studies it and uses it to win his own arguments. We find where Paul said in Acts 17, for in him we live and move and have our being, and certain also of your own poets have said. And Paul used those other men's works to justify his own truth and argument. He knew what them other men thought, and he knew what argument to use against them. Timothy, you better give attendance to read so that you'll have something to say when you get up to speak. Who wants to listen to a lunatic preacher? God. Brother Jack's favorite words, he bore the leg off a chair. Heard him say it for years. Books are to occupy the important parts of your life. You need to love books. You need to love the smell. You need to love the feel of a book. You need to love just how a book looks. A life without a book is empty. Bookshelves make better decorations than whatnots. But you got to fight the wife over that one. Some of you going to win, some of you going to lose. Mark Twain said, the man who does not read has no advantage over the man that cannot. You look at a blind man that's uneducated, ignorant, and afflicted, uninteresting, and we pity him because he can't read. But you look at a man who will not read, and we see a blind, ignorant, afflicted, uninteresting, and we don't pity him a bit. Reading is dying in our culture. It's dying. In 1991, they said one half the American population read a half hour daily. In 1999, they said less than one half of America reads at all. 7% in the year 2000 read a book a week, the population of America. And so advertisement has learned where we're at. And that's why when they advertise, they don't use words no more. They use pictures and graphics because it captures the mind. Because people won't look up to read, but they'll look up at a picture. People don't read anymore to help them make important decisions in their life. If you don't read, you don't know much. If you don't read, you're dangerous. If you don't read, you're dangerous to yourself. If you don't read, you're dangerous to your family. If you don't read, you're dangerous to your church. If you don't read, you're dangerous to society. You're dangerous to the world if you don't read. You're a dangerous person, sometimes. Dangerous. Now the third reason why you ought to read, real simple, keep being ignorant. Now I'm going to go through these rather hurriedly, but I want you to turn to the book of Romans, the very first chapter, and I'll slow down just a little bit because we're morning time, and I hope we're not in a hurry. I hope if your stomach's growling, just slap it. It'll quit for a while. But I want you to follow me. The Apostle Paul had a favorite saying that he loved to repeat over and over and over. Now, I'm in Romans chapter 1, I'm in verse 13, and Paul said, now, I would not have you ignorant, brethren. Look in Romans chapter 10 and verse 3. Stay with me, run with me. Romans chapter 10, verse 3. For they being ignorant of God's righteousness. Look in chapter 11, 25. For I would not, brethren, that you should be ignorant of this mystery. Look in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1. Moreover, brethren, I would that you should not be ignorant. Look in chapter 12 and verse 1. Now concerning spiritual gifts, brethren, I would not have you ignorant. Now look in chapter 14, verse 38. If any man be ignorant, let him be ignorant. Look in 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 8. For we would not, brethren, have you ignorant. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 13. But I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren. The word ignorant is defined as unlearned, untaught, uneducated, deficient of book learning. The Apostle Paul was trying to say, my God, church, don't be ignorant. Now, if the Apostle Paul had a favorite saying that he loved to repeat over and over and over, then the Lord Jesus also had a phrase that he loved to repeat over and over and over. Turn with me to the book of Matthew right quick. And I want you to stay with me and run with me hurriedly so we don't have to spend a lot of time here, because you're going to get under such conviction. I'm in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 3. But he said unto them, have you not read what David did when he was hungry and they that were with him? How he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priest? Or have you not read in the law how that on the Sabbath day the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? Look with me in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 4. Stay with me. Chapter 19, verse 4, Jesus said, and he answered and said unto them, have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? I'd say the homosexuals are crazy because they don't read. I'm still with Jesus. Look in Matthew chapter 21 and look at verse number 16. And said unto them, hearest thou what these say? And Jesus said unto them, yea, have you never read out of the mouth of babes and sucklings thou hast perfected praise? Look in chapter 22 and verse 31. But as touching the resurrection of the dead, have you not read that which was spoken unto you by God? You know what, Jesus? Listen, we just got... John said if everything that Jesus said was written in books, there wouldn't be enough books. If he said it five times, he said it 5,000 times. Have you never read? What's wrong with you? You wouldn't even be asking me these stupid questions if you had done read. Why are you asking me anyway? Read it for yourself. You don't know why you're doing. You don't know what you're doing. The reason why you don't know what you're doing is because you ain't never read. That's what he was saying to them. My God, read. Listen, you can't keep going on in your logic. For God's sake, spare us. Don't go on in your logic. You'll crack up for sure. Get advice. Read. Please don't give me your opinion. I don't want to hear your ideas. Tell me what somebody else said. I know they're smarter. The third reason why you ought to read is bless your life. Blessed is he that readeth. Revelation chapter 1, verse 5. Reading means to confer happiness. Reading is a happy person. A reader that reads and enjoys reading is a happy person. Reading will keep you out of trouble. How do you know God wants us to read, preacher? Put it in the book. That's why I know he wants us to read. Seek ye out the book of the Lord and read, Isaiah said. Don't let all the reading that you do take you away from this book. Oh, there's a lot of good books. There's a lot of old friends. There's a lot of friends out there. There's a lot of books that can help. And all you're reading, don't neglect this book. This book will keep you right on all the other books if you read this book. Sam Jones, I love using this illustration. Sam Jones, a drunken lawyer out of Georgia. Boy, his mama got down on her knees and read her Bible through 38 times, cover to cover. And every time she'd come across in promises, and tears would drop, and she would beg God, and God saved her son, Sam P. Jones. You just ought to read the books on the things he accomplished in this country. How'd he get the power? How'd he get the call? He got it from an old mama that read her book down on her knees and begged God. I enjoy reading. Now, I'll say this from what I've observed and learned. Not all women are this way. But don't expect wives to understand men and reading. Don't expect most wives to understand men and books. They just never will. Why are you buying them for? You ain't read what you got. Wish I hadn't died every time I heard that. Don't spend all you buy more books for. That money's for me. I want a dress. The preacher needs a book, woman. He don't preach, he don't get no money. You're going to be in a sackcloth. The smarter he gets, the more invitations, the more offers, the more money. Buffets, Sony's, everything. Books. Listen, I don't preach nothing new. I just borrow from other people preaching. Everybody thinks I'm a great preacher. Boy, have I got them fooled. I borrow everything. In 1990... Stephen Bloomberg was arrested in Colorado. They went into his house and they found 11,000 rare books that he had stolen from 327 libraries across America. They pulled him up in front of the judge. That judge looked down at him and he said, "Why?" No, Stephen Bloomberg looked back up and said, "Because I love him." He said, "I love him. If I had written the Ten Commandments, I'd have said, 'Thou shalt not steal, except a good book.' If a sucker ain't going to read it, it deserves to be stolen. If it's just going to sit up on the shelf, it's going to sit there, it needs to be stolen. You ever stolen a book?" Don't ask me that question. It deserved to be stolen. I borrowed it for eternity. I know where it's at. I can take it back to him anytime. James Edwards was a famous bookseller and reader in England. Everybody used to love to go to his bookstore and sit and talk to him about books. In his will and when he died, his instructions: take my books off my shelves, take my shelves and take my coffee. I want my coffee made out of my bookshelves because I want to be permanently in my books. And they did. I want to close Daniel chapter 9. Would you look over there with me right quick? Daniel chapter 9. Daniel's been carried off down into captivity. He's lost his home, away from his homeland. No mom, no dad. Down among the Babylonians who don't dress like him and don't eat like him, don't talk like him. No God. Daniel's down in Babylon. Daniel chapter 9, verse 2. How can a man survive in such captivity? Daniel chapter 9, verse 2. In the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by books the number of the years whereof the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolation of Jerusalem. He survived the Babylonian captivity. Books. That's why when they saw him and saw the wisdom that he had and he rose up third in the kingdom, how did he get there? Books! Every new emperor that took the throne recognized in Daniel such wisdom. Was he born with it? Books. I come out of a bookstore in London
And this was on the door as you walked out of the bookstore in London. It says, the case against bookstealers. It said, for him that stealeth a book from this library, let it be changed into a serpent in his hand and rending. Let him be struck with palsy and all of his members blasted. Let him languish in pain, crying aloud for mercy, and let there be no cease in his agony till he sinks in dissolution. Let the bookworm gnaw his entrails in token of the worm that dieth not, and when at last he goeth to his own final punishment, let the flames of hell consume him forever and aye. That was found on the door of a library in a monastery in Barcelona, Spain, in 1504. Them people love books in days gone by. We ought to too. The books they're writing today, shallow. I'm not saying they're not good books, but shallow compared to the thought life of men days gone by. And I tell you, I believe God Almighty in his providence and wisdom knew that we were going to be at an age that was noisy, full of activity, going to and fro. And that we would never be able to get up in that thought life that them old men had. When they went from place to place, walking, riding a horse, reading a book, and where they went. They lived in a quieter world than we did. And there for about 400 years, they wrote the best books the world's ever. God wrote it for us to glean from, enjoy, to keep us from this crazy society. Give attendance until I come. Jesus is saying, until I come, church, give attendance to me. Would you bow your heads? Can I give an invitation? Would you let me? As the piano plays, I wonder if you can come today, mama, dad, boy, girl. I wonder if you'd come today and just say, Lord, I have sure been slacking. I've had other things that have caught my attention, got my affection. But I wish today that you'd touch my heart, that I'd read more. I wish you would, Lord. It'll keep you out of sin. You're not in front of a television when you're reading a good book. The mind is growing in the midst of a good book. It'll help your mama escape the responsibilities and load a home. It'll help your children when you talk to them. Help your church. Help your friends. It'll attract. You'll have more friends that you never thought you'd have. Be careful with too much fooling around with this world and all of its gadgetry. Love books. Oh, love books. Love them, love them, love books. Sometimes I buy a book just because I don't want nobody else to have it. I may never read it, but I sure don't want that other guy to have it. He ain't going to do it right. It looked better sitting on my shelf. It will die in his library.